Imagine spending like 6 months.
Oh, and easily over $2 million.
Yeah, exactly. $2 million building this perfect autonomous AI agent for your enterprise. It interacts with your customers, it learns their preferences.
Anticipates what they need before they even ask.
Right. It's flawless. But then, say a year later, you decide, hey, we need to switch cloud providers to save on some costs.
Which is pretty standard.
Very standard. But that is the exact moment you realize all of your AI's memories, every single preference, every contextual nuance it learned about your users is permanently trapped.
Yeah, trapped inside a proprietary database.
You legally and technically cannot get those memories out. So
Yeah.
your $2 million AI is, well, it's essentially wiped clean.
It is a devastating scenario. And I mean, it happens far more often than companies care to admit. Because you look at the marketing brochures for these AI platforms, and they promise that building autonomous systems is, practically plug and play.
Right, deploy in 5 minutes,
Yeah.
stuff like that.
Exactly. But they completely gloss over the fact that the underlying architecture you choose on day one, it fundamentally dictates your technical debt, your data ownership, and your operational budget for years to come.
Which is exactly why we are tearing apart that glossy marketing today. Welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
So we actually got our hands on this draft status, internal course chapter from the Koenig AI Academy.
Dated April 2026, so it's super fresh.
Super fresh. And this isn't some public PR piece, right? It's a gritty, hands-on training document. It's meant to warn back-end engineers about the real-world traps of deploying AI agents.
Yeah, the focus of the document is strictly on the big three platforms that hit general availability between what, 2024 and 2026.
Yep. So that's Google's Gemini Enterprise Agent Platform, which everyone basically just calls GCP,
Right.
Anthropic's Claude Agent SDK, and Cloudflare Agents.
And, on the surface, if you just read their feature lists online, they look identical. I mean, they all run AI agents. But when you actually look at the engineering layer, they take fundamentally, I'd even say philosophically opposite approaches to how an AI thinks, how it stores its memories, and where it physically exists on the internet.
Okay, let's unpack this because before we get into the brutal trade-offs, we really need a baseline.
Sure.
If I'm an engineer and I'm looking at these platforms in 2026, what are the absolute table stakes? Like, what are the core features every single one of these contenders must have just to, be in the conversation?
Okay, so the draft lays out three non-negotiable capabilities for production-grade agents today. First up is tool calling.
Right.
An AI can't just generate text anymore. It has to take actual
Yeah, actually,
action.
just actually do things.
Exactly. It needs to be able to securely reach out, execute a block of Python code, hit an external API, or run a SQL query directly against your database.
Make real changes in the real world.
Exactly. So that's one. Second is multi-agent coordination,
Yeah.
because we've kind of moved past the idea of one massive omniscient brain trying to do everything at once.
Yeah, that just leads to hallucinations anyway.
Right. So complex enterprise tasks are broken down now. They're handed off to specialized sub-agents. And these sub-agents, they negotiate and talk to each other to reach a final goal.
So it's kind of like having a researcher agent that goes out and gathers the data and then passes it to an analyst agent that actually runs the numbers.
Who then hands it to a writer agent to format the final report.
Exactly. That makes sense.
And that leads directly to the third requirement, which is long-running workflows.
Okay, define that.
Well, we are no longer talking about a simple chat window where you just ask a question and wait 10 seconds for a reply.
Right.
A production agent in an enterprise environment might be tasked with, say, migrating a legacy code base. That's a job that takes several days.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So the platform has to be able to pause that agent's thought process, literally put it to sleep while it waits for a system respond.
And to wake it back up.
Wake it back up without losing its train of thought. And GAAPE, the Claude SDK, and Cloudflare, they all handle these three basics perfectly.
But, and this is the big but, if they all execute the same basic tasks, the real friction comes from how they force developers to build them.
Right. You really can't have it all.
The Academy draft makes it very, very clear that you are essentially forced to choose between absolute convenience, blistering network speed, or total granular control.
Yeah, the battle lines are drawn entirely around infrastructure philosophy. So take Google's G, for example.
Okay.
It is fully managed and highly opinionated. Google basically assumes that if you want to use G8, you are perfectly happy living inside the Google Cloud Platform or GCP ecosystem.
Which means they handle all the messy plumbing for you.
Yes.
Like they do the routing, the agent registries, the safety guardrails, all right out of the box.
But you do it their way.
Right.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Then you look at Anthropic's Claude Agent SDK, and it is the exact opposite.
Totally different beast.
It is completely unopinionated about your infrastructure. Anthropic natively hooks your system up to their Claude family of models.
Most notably, Claude Opus 4.7. Right.
Yes, which the engineering draft points out is still the absolute strongest reasoning model for complex tasks.
Mm-hmm.
But Anthropic only provides the brain. If you want a database, a server, or a deployment pipeline, they essentially shrug and say, that's an engineering problem. You go figure it out.
Good luck.
Right.
And then sitting squarely in the what we'd call the speed category is Cloudflare agents.
Mm-hmm.
It's a TypeScript SDK, which means it's built for developers using JavaScript frameworks. And it runs entirely on Cloudflare's global edge network.
Rather than a centralized data center.
Right. So, you know, reading through how these three operate, it immediately made me think about real estate.
Oh, interesting.
Like, the platform you pick is essentially the type of housing you build for your code.
I like that. Let's explore that mapping.
So, if you choose GA, it is like signing a lease on a fully furnished, ultra-luxury high-rise apartment. It is impossibly convenient. The electricity is already on. The plumbing is flawless. There's a doorman handling security downstairs.
Sounds nice.
It is.
Yeah.
But all that plumbing is sealed behind the drywall. If you decide you want to move a sink or change the layout of the living room, building management is going to tell you no. You live exactly how Google designed the building.
And the Claude SDK.
So the Claude SDK is like buying 20 acres of empty land in the wilderness.
Huh. Just a dirt patch.
Just a dirt patch. You have absolute maximum freedom. You can build a log cabin, an underground bunker, a sprawling mansion, whatever. But that means you personally have to pour the concrete foundation, run all the electrical wires, and dig your own well. Maximum freedom equals maximum engineering labor.
Which leaves Cloudflare as what, the high-speed RV?
Yes, the high-speed RV. It is incredibly agile. You can drive it instantly to wherever your users are in the world. It's lean, it's fast, but you are living in a fundamentally different architecture than a heavy, permanent brick and mortar building.
That's a perfect analogy, exactly. But if we push past the housing metaphor and look at the actual code.
Yeah, let's get into the code.
The type of infrastructure you choose completely dictates the single biggest hurdle in AI right now, and that is state management.
State.
What's fascinating here is that state is often treated as this really dry back-end concept, but it is actually the soul of the AI.
Because state is basically memory.
State is memory. When an AI processes information, it has a context window. Basically, a limited amount of text it can keep in its active brain at any given second.
Mm-hmm.
If you just keep feeding it a conversation over and over, eventually that window fills up, the system crashes, or it just forgets the beginning of the chat entirely.
So the system needs a way to take a massive filing cabinet of past mm-hmm. interactions, sort them, compress them, and only pull out the exact folder it needs for the current moment.
Exactly. And how these three platforms manage that filing cabinet is a massive divergence.
Let's break that down.
Let's look at the luxury high-rise first, GEAP. GEAP uses a fully managed layered state. For the active conversation you are having right now, today, it uses something called agent sessions.
Got it. Short term.
Right. And for long-term memory that spans days or weeks, it automatically uses a feature called Memory Bank. The developer never writes a database schema. They never build a retrieval pipeline.
It's just magic.
GAPE automatically summarizes older conversations and drops them into the Memory Bank, totally behind the scenes.
Okay, wait. I have to push back on this.
Oh, sure.
Because anyone who has ever written software knows that when a platform says, oh, we handle the database for you behind the scenes, there is always a massive catch.
There usually is.
Right. So what if I want to see exactly how my AI is summarizing those memories? Like, what if I want to audit the exact logic it used to decide what was important enough to save?
You can't.
You can't.
No, you literally can't. That is the exact trade-off for the luxury high-rise. With GAPE, those memory summaries, they call them memory profiles, they are generated by Google's Gemini models, using proprietary distillation algorithms. And the training draft warns engineers explicitly about this. If Google pushes an update to the underlying Gemini model next Tuesday, the way your agent decides what to remember might subtly change on Wednesday.
And you have no say in it.
You have absolutely no control over that logic. It's a black box. You are sacrificing transparency for convenience.
Wow. So you are entirely at the mercy of their algorithm for the core context of your entire business?
Yep.
That is a massive leap of faith. Now, contrast that with the empty plot of Lant, the Claude SDK. Mm. The draft says this is a complete bring-your-own-state model.
Yeah.
So Anthropic provides exactly zero built-in memory management.
Zero. Nothing. If you want a Claude agent to remember what happened yesterday, you have to inject that memory into the prompt yourself every single time you call the API.
Which means the developer has to build the entire filing cabinet from scratch.
Yes.
So I imagine that means what? Standing up a Postgres database?
Writing the embedding pipeline to turn text into searchable vectors?
And building the actual mathematical retrieval logic to find the right memories before the context window fills up.
It does. And the document notes that building a production-grade, scalable memory system for the Claude SDK takes weeks, sometimes literally months, of heavy back-end engineering.
Because it's hard.
It is incredibly difficult to do well. But, and this goes to your earlier point about the black box, the flip side is that with Claude, you own every single byte.
Mm.
If you want to completely rewrite the retrieval algorithm because you want to prioritize financial data over casual chatter,
you just rewrite your code.
Exactly. And if you want to take your database and move to Amazon Web Services tomorrow, the data is yours to take.
So we have the black box and the heavy build.
Mm.
But the high-speed RV, Cloudflare, they handle this entirely differently.
Totally different.
The code snippet in the draft shows they just use a command called this. State,
yeah,
which sits on top of something called a durable object.
Okay, this is one of the most elegant architectural designs in the field right now. Oh, yeah. A durable object is essentially a tiny, isolated microserver that spins up for a specific task. And it has its own SQLite database built right into it.
Oh.
The memory isn't sitting in some massive centralized server farm halfway across the country. The brain and the filing cabinet are physically fused together in the same tiny unit.
And the document makes a huge deal about the fact that the reads and writes on these durable objects are atomic.
Right.
Which, in database terms, just means that reading a memory and updating a memory happen as a single, unbreakable step.
Right. Exactly. Which is huge because you never run into a glitchy race condition.
Like where the AI tries to read a memory at the exact millisecond, another process is trying to update it.
Resulting in a hallucinated or corrupted state.
Exactly.
Because the compute and the storage are fused, it is instantly consistent.
That's amazing.
There's no distinction between a short-term chat session and a long-term database. It's all just sitting on that specific durable object.
But if they have the filing cabinet built in, that naturally leads to the next massive problem, which is, where is that cabinet physically located?
Always the question.
Because in computing, physical distance is the absolute enemy of speed. Distance equals latency.
Deployment topology. It dictates literally everything from user experience to infrastructure costs.
So let's track where these agents actually run.
Okay.
With GApe, your agents are deployed in standard GCP regions. So you pick a server farm, say a central one in Iowa or Europe West 4 in the Netherlands, and your code lives there.
Mm-hmm.
And the document notes that cold starts, which is the literal time it takes for an idle agent to wake up, load its memory, and start processing, are sub-second because Google keeps these instances pre-warmed.
They basically leave the engine idling for you in the parking lot.
Right. And with the Claude SDK, because you own the land, you run it wherever you built it.
Yeah, it could be on a private server rack in your office basement. Or spread across multiple AWS zones. Your cold start latency is entirely dependent on how good your DevOps team is at configuring infrastructure.
But here's where it gets really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Cloudflare agents, they do not run in a centralized server farm. They run on Cloudflare's global edge network, which spans over 300 cities worldwide.
Right, the edge.
And the Koenig engineers highlight that Cloudflare's cold starts are sub-millisecond.
It's crazy fast.
Sub-millisecond. And they natively feature WebSocket support.
Which is huge.
Yeah, explain WebSockets real quick for us.
So WebSockets aren't like standard web traffic where you send a request, wait, and get a response. WebSockets hold a continuous open pipe of two-way communication between the user and the AI.
And that speed difference is paradigm shifting.
Oh, absolutely. A sub-second cold start on a Google server in Iowa is fast for a database query. But a sub-millisecond start on an edge server in your user's actual city that feels instantaneous to human perception.
There's this brilliant real-world scenario in the source that paints this picture perfectly.
The coding assistant one.
Yes. Imagine you are a startup and you're building an AI coding assistant that lives directly inside a developer's code editor, like VS Code.
Right.
For that AI to feel like it's intuitively paired with you, like actually predicting your code as you type it, it needs to process your keystrokes and respond in under 200 milliseconds.
Because anything's slower and the developer feels a lag that completely breaks their flow state. It's jarring.
Exactly. So if you build that assistant on JEP, every time the developer types a line, the editor has to send that data packet from their laptop in, say, London, across the ocean to a server farm in Iowa.
Wait for the AI to process it.
And then send the prediction back.
Uh-huh.
That physical distance makes a 200 millisecond response physically impossible.
The speed of light is the speed of light.
Right. The latency kills the product.
Mm-hmm.
But with Cloudflare's edge network, that agent is essentially spun up on a server node just a few miles from the developer's house in London.
Mm-hmm.
It is functionally like having the AI sitting at the desk right next to you.
Yeah, for a real-time, highly interactive workflow like a coding assistant, it really is unmatched. But,
no, but
there's a big but. And this is a massive caveat that the engineering draft stresses. The edge has a critical weakness, and that is cross-region consistency.
Wait, why? If it's everywhere, shouldn't it be perfectly consistent everywhere?
Okay, think back to the durable objects we talked about. We established that the brain and the filing cabinet are fused together into one unit.
Right, the atomic microserver.
But that specific durable object physically exists in one location.
Mm.
So let's say your user lives in New York. So their durable object spins up on a New York edge server. What happens when they board a flight to Tokyo, connect to the hotel Wi-Fi, and open your app?
Well, the network routes them to a Tokyo edge server.
Exactly. But their AI's memory, their durable object, is still sitting on a hard drive in New York.
Oh, wow. So the Tokyo node basically looks at the user and says, I have absolutely no idea who you are.
Yes. The state is isolated.
That is a nightmare.
It is. Cloudflare has to try and manage this using what they call location hints, which essentially means forwarding the traffic back across the world to New York anyway.
Which entirely defeats the purpose of edge speed.
Exactly. Or they have to try migrating the database on the fly. It introduces a massive layer of engineering complexity that you simply do not have to worry about if you just put everything in one centralized Google server farm in Iowa.
So speed and convenience demand incredibly specific architectural commitments.
You do.
Which brings us back to the nightmare scenario we actually opened the show with.
The trapped data.
What happens when a company commits to one of these architectures, mm-hmm. builds their entire business on it, and 2 years later wants to leave?
Vendor lock-in.
The phrase that keeps CTOs awake at night.
Truly.
Yeah.
But you know, the Koenig draft makes a very nuanced point here. Lock-in is not a binary yes or no question. You can always leave.
Mm-hmm.
The real question is, how much time, capital, and engineering blood will it cost you to migrate? It is a spectrum.
Let's map that spectrum then.
Okay.
On the far end of the pain scale, we have high lock-in, GEAP.
Mm.
The actual logic you write to tell your agent how to use tools, your agent development kit code that's open source, you can copy paste that.
Sure.
But literally everything else that makes the agent actually function is a proprietary closed system. We mentioned the memory bank has no export API.
Right.
But it's also the agent registry that catalogs your agents, the agent gateway that handles the network traffic, and agent identity, which handles the cryptographic security IDs.
All locked.
If you want to leave GCP, you're essentially deleting your infrastructure and rebuilding all of those platform services from scratch.
Yeah, that's heavy. Then you have medium lock-in with Cloudflare.
Okay.
The way you write the code to trigger the agent using their at-callable pattern, that is entirely open source. But those durable objects, the microserver with the built-in Skylight, the WebSocket management layers.
Well, proprietary.
The alarm systems that asynchronously wake the agent up at a specific time. Those are completely proprietary to Cloudflare's network. If you want to move to AWS, you have to architect a totally new way for your code to remember things and schedule tasks.
And finally, we have low lock-in with the Cloud SDK.
Mm.
Because as we established, you built the filing cabinet and you own the server, so your code and state are yours.
Yeah.
If you get mad at Anthropic, or if a better model comes out next month, you just change your API endpoint to point at a different model.
Right. The draft specifically mentions using a gateway router like LLM,
which translates your code calls into OpenAI format or Meta format instantly.
Zero lock-in.
So, and I really want to pose this to knowing all of this. Why on earth would a company willingly choose high lock-in?
It's a great question.
Like if GPath legally traps my data in a memory bank with no export button, Why would any sane enterprise sign up for that?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to realize that for massive corporations, lock-in is not a bug. It is the acceptable price of enterprise governance.
Explain that.
A Fortune 500 company cares infinitely more about passing a legal audit than they do about whether their code is perfectly portable. The Koenig draft highlights a perfect example. A compliance monitoring agent for a highly regulated fintech bank.
Right. Banking. A sector where a mistake doesn't just mean a bad user experience. It means a billion-dollar fine from the SEC.
Exactly. So this fintech agent has to monitor thousands of transactions, flag anomalies, and legally retain 90 days of immutable, cryptographically sound audit logs to prove exactly why the AI made a specific decision.
Yeah.
If you build that on the open source Claude SDK, a security pipeline that regulators will actually trust.
But GAP has that built in.
Out of the box. Google's agent identity feature assigns a verifiable cryptographic ID to every single time the agent is invoked. It wires directly into Google's security command center.
Wow.
They have built-in agent anomaly detection. And this isn't just, you know, scanning chat logs for bad words.
Mm.
It is actively monitoring the exact API calls the agent is trying to make. If a customer service agent suddenly attempts an API call to wire $50,000, GEP instantly flags and kills the process.
That's incredible.
For a bank, Google handling the compliance infrastructure saves them immense legal risk. They don't care about lock-in. The lock-in is the feature.
That reframes it completely. The golden handcuffs are what's keeping them out of federal court.
Yes.
But this actually leads to a really crucial pivot in the engineering document.
Uh-huh.
We've spent this entire time looking at these platforms as mutually exclusive islands.
Right.
Like you pick the high rise, the plot of land, or the RV.
Mm.
But the source notes that when you look at how top-tier engineering teams are actually building in 2026, they aren't choosing just one.
No, not at all. The most sophisticated production environments use a highly modular hybrid approach. They slice the architecture horizontally.
Using the best piece of each platform to cover the weaknesses of the others.
Exactly.
So let's walk through what a hybrid setup actually looks like.
Okay, let's take that fintech example again. They want the heavy enterprise governance and the audit trails from Google. But for a specific, incredibly complex risk assessment task, Gemini isn't cutting it.
Right.
They need the raw, deep reasoning power of Anthropic's Claude Opus. So they use GP as the orchestrator.
Mm.
GA handles the security, the routing, and the logs. But when it's time to make the hard decision, GA triggers a sub-agent built on the Claude SDK to actually crunch the numbers.
Though the Koenig engineers do throw a quick flag on that
point. You do, yeah.
Because GP technically supports routing out to over 200 different AI models. But if you try to use their automated magical features like Agent Optimizer, which automatically tweaks your prompts to be more efficient.
Those tools structurally assume you are using a Gemini model.
Right. If you plug Claude into Jeep, you lose some of that platform level optimization.
It's a real friction point for sure. But let's look at another hybrid. Blending Cloudflare's speed with Jeep's backend.
Oh, I like this one.
You deploy a lightweight Cloudflare agent to the edge to handle the live WebSocket connection with the user. The user gets that instant sub-50 millisecond UI response, so the app feels incredibly fast.
Snappy.
Super snappy. But behind the scenes, that edge node takes the heavy asynchronous processing jobs and securely pushes them back to a Jeep agent runtime backend. Division of labor.
Or, if you want to avoid the Google ecosystem entirely, you could pair the Claude SDK's reasoning power directly with Cloudflare's durable objects.
Mm-hmm.
You use Claude for the brain and Cloudflare for the state, which gives you a beautifully simple co-located memory system without having to provision and manage a massive Postgres database on AWS.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean for you, the developer? It means the threat of vendor lock-in has to be analyzed at every single layer of your stack independently. Modularity is basically your only defense mechanism.
Precisely. You can absolutely buy into Jeep for your routing and compliance, but explicitly choose to write your memory retrieval pipeline to store raw customer data in your own SQL database instead of Google's memory bank.
Right.
You get the security audit trails without trapping your most valuable data.
Well, we have dissected a massive amount of architecture today.
We really have.
We dove into the mechanics of state management, looking at how Gemini uses black box algorithms to distill memories versus the heavy lift of building your own database for Claude.
Mm-hmm.
We mapped out deployment topologies, comparing the instantaneous WebSockets of Cloudflare's Global Edge to the pre-warm security of GCP server farms.
Right.
And we unpack the real millions of dollars business cost of vendor lock-in, proving that sometimes golden handcuffs are exactly what an enterprise needs. Hopefully, knowing the physical realities behind the marketing hype shortcuts your path to building the right foundation for your AI.
This raises an important question, though, a thought experiment to leave you with.
Let's hear it.
The Koenig draft highlights that just managing the memory consistency for a single Cloudflare agent moving between New York and Tokyo is a massive engineering headache.
Yeah.
But look forward. If every enterprise is building these fragmented, custom hybrid architectures, some on Jeep, some on Claude, some on Cloudflare, what happens next year?
Right, because the whole promise of this technology is that eventually these agents will negotiate with each other on our behalf.
Exactly. What happens when billions of disparate AI agents need to share context, negotiate a contract, and transfer long-term memories across entirely different proprietary platforms?
Oh, man.
Will the tech industry be forced to invent some kind of universal translation layer for AI state? Or will the internet permanently fracture into isolated vendor-specific agent silos where a Google agent literally cannot comprehend the database of an Anthropic agent?
It's the ultimate interoperability crisis.
It really is.
Well, if you are deciding what kind of foundation to pour for your AI today, it is absolutely worth looking at the blueprints and asking yourself what the rest of the neighborhood is going to look like tomorrow. Mull that over.